This is Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat. Reinhard Heinisch is the chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Salzburg. He has written extensively about populism in Austria and his country's embrace of the political right. He spoke with my colleague, Rebecca Cruz.
Reinhard Heinisch, welcome to Worldviews.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, we've spent the last year or so really looking at populism in Europe, around the world, but focusing primarily in Europe, and have watched the Brexit and have been watching some other elections throughout the year, perhaps starting at the end of last year in Austria, and then some other elections, the French election, and we look forward to some elections as well. Mentioning the Austrian election, that's where your expertise is. Maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about what's going on in Austrian politics for the last couple of years.
Well, first of all, Austria is not a particularly important or significant country, but being close to Germany, Austria sort of historically had a populist right-wing party since the 1980s. And whenever we watch Austrian politics, we tend to look at Germany as well. And there is a party up and coming and developing in Germany that's very close to the Austrian Populist Party, and the Austrian populists are sort of the big brother, if you will. And ideologically, they're very similar. The big issue in all these countries is the question of identity. For a long time, we were wondering what is driving the surge of right-wing populism. We thought maybe it's the modernization losers, people who are losing their jobs. But the problem with that argument is these are pretty wealthy countries, very prosperous countries. And if any country is well prepared to deal with globalization, it should be these countries. They're also generally well managed. These are not countries where, you know, the economy is in terrible state. Unemployment is virtually non-existent in Austria, is very low. But the question of identity, these are countries that are overwhelmed by the changes that are going on in the world. There has been tremendous immigration in the city that I live in, Salzburg. German is no longer the number one language in public schools.
Yeah, this was fascinating. You said 50% of those in public schools are speaking non-German languages.
Speaking non-German languages. And if we go to an Austrian village or town, many of the students of the last names have changed. Mm. And that happened practically overnight over the last 20 years.
But 20 years, I think that's also important because we've been focusing so much on the last couple of years. And the current surge in refugees and immigrants is certainly pushed this along, but this is a longer process.
Exactly. It's a longer process, and there are different layers of groups of immigrants. And it's now sort of a perfect storm. You know, it's one thing to receive and try to deal with them when they come as refugees, but to integrate them in society. And we know the European countries have not been great at integration. They are not historically immigrant societies. They lack certain procedures. They often congregate in big cities, and that leads to problems. And for example, even in Austria, it's a very rigid society in terms of upward social mobility. People sort of stay in their class structure. And we know at the university I work at, being the number one predictor for somebody to attend a university is if their parents have attended university. So it's even if it's difficult for Austrian workers, for German people of working class background to attend university, can you imagine how difficult it is for somebody from a different culture, a country, doesn't speak the language? So often these people then trapped in low-level jobs. And that leads to frustration. And in the second generation, they feel, of course, both native and foreign, and that creates problems. And this is something that's coming at a time when resources are being scaled back. We all have to save. You know, the economies have been tough recently. And I think we're seeing some of those effects. And the effects is that's translating into a shift to the right of some polarization, both on the side of the natives or on the Austrians, but also on the part of people with immigrant background who've become more conscious of their ethnic roots. I have students that now, they say inshallah, God willing, when they speak Arabic to each other, which is something you see a lot more young women wearing veils. And this is something that's causing a big debate in Austria. And that is a debate that right-wing political operators can use to mobilize populations that are afraid of losing their status, their privileges, losing their place in society. And I think that's what we see going on.
So you're suggesting that this really started to get underway in the 1980s, the 1990s. You have mentioned in discussion before that there were Turkish workers that came forward or came to Austria. And then, of course, the Balkan Wars neighboring to Austria, that there was a large population movement there.
Right. Austria is right on the doorstep of the Balkans. So the war in the Balkans affected Austria. Austria took in a lot of refugees. And because this was a much closer war, the historical ties to the Balkans, it was easier for people to sympathize. The war in Syria had been going on for some time, but for Austrians it was something very far away. And when large waves of refugees essentially moving through Austria to Germany showed up, this was a real significant issue. And a very, very large number stayed in Austria, proportionally to the population, a number that was actually greater than the ones staying in Germany. And there was this tremendous welcome culture of and Austrians felt very good at the beginning, but then later on the cost and poor planning on the part of the government, and how do you plan for something like that? I mean, this was really stretching the limits of what the government was able to do at all levels. And then, of course, that also translated into political mobilization against foreigners and refugees, and it's been a touchy subject ever since.
And what does that mobilization look like? How are politicians using this to their advantage? Mm. I imagine it's somewhat consistent throughout Europe, perhaps also one could argue in the United States, but is there something unique to the Austrian situation?
What is probably unique is Austria is a Catholic country. When I say Catholic, it is not religiously Catholic, but it's Catholic in the cultural sense. And there's maybe more of this sort of religious tinge to it than, say, in Germany, for example, respecting traditional Christian symbols and celebrations and festivals. Austrians are very proud of their food and their ethnic heritage, sort of the idea now people that they should adjust to Austrian cultures of values. So these are the kinds of, it's more of a cultural religious debate. I would say in Germany, it deals more with the economy. It's more of an economic issue. In Austria, it has that cultural dimension as well.
So the messaging that's coming from these parties is one of fear, one of challenging of culture.
Exactly. And what was the case in Austria, there was one party that was sort of a right-wing populist party, but then when the other parties were pretty much mainstream and fairly liberal, fairly open. And now the mainstream parties are moving decisively into the more culture restrictive sense. So in other words, the far right has pushed the agenda, sets the agenda, and the mainstream parties feel they have to follow suit. They're competing with each other. Now we have a discussion on banning veiling in public, and their discussion, how much veiling would you tolerate, for example. Now, this was a debate that would have been unthinkable just 3 or 4 years ago. Now this is actually going to be law that you, in certain public places, you cannot wear a veil. That's also the case in France. And when one European country has one or the other thing, then others follow suit. And Austria always seems to come down on the conservative side of that debate. In Germany, because it's larger, it's more diverse, some of these issues are counterbalanced by more liberal parts in Germany. That's missing in Austria. Austria is very similar to neighboring Bavaria, which is the southern part of Germany, also very Catholic. But there's this more Protestant northern part, and that's missing in Austria. So therefore, you have a more intense debate and maybe somewhat harsher opinions than you would have in Germany.
Well, and I think you've also mentioned in some of your talks that Germany had this process of dealing with their history, their Nazi past of right-wing extremism that Austria didn't have. Why didn't that happen?
Right. Because Austria was annexed by Nazi Germany, but many leading Nazis were Austrians. Hitler himself was born in Austria. And in many ways, you can argue that Nazism in part is of an Austrian idea, or goes back to the sort of insecurity of the German speakers in Austria living in a multi-ethnic empire and wondering how German they are. I mean, if you live in Germany, you don't question your Germanness, but if you live in Austria and you're in many other nationalities in the old empire, the people are very insecure about their Germanness. And that idea, I think, was therefore very powerful in Austria. How German are we? Then after World War II, it was not cool to be German. So Austria had to show that they are non-German and had sort of completely eliminate their German past and pretended to be completely Austrian, nothing to do with Germany, in order to have the country restored, to have independence restored and get the Allies to move out of Austria once they occupied it. And of course, they were so successful in convincing themselves that they had nothing to do with Germany, they were surprised when they found out that actually they were quite culpable. There were many Austrians were culprits. And that happened in the 1980s, but much later. So Austria had a very painful soul-searching period in the 1980s and 90s, while Germany did this already 20 years earlier, but that sort of coincided with the first wave of the refugees, this whole question, who we are, what is Austrian identity? And I think that spawned a right-wing populist party much sooner than in Germany, because some Austrians really resented, you know, foreigners telling Austrians they're simply not as wonderful as they thought. And in some ways, that was the beginning of this sort of right-wing trend in Austria that we see now pretty much everywhere else in Europe.
And so there is a party, at least one party, the Austrian Freedom Party, that has been quite to the right, seemed to be getting some political movement. And then in December, they didn't fare quite as well as they had hoped. And perhaps some have argued that we're seeing a reverse domino effect, that Belgium then didn't go quite as far to the right. France, you know, we'll see what happens in the rest of Europe. But are things shifting?
I can say Brexit and Donald Trump did wonders for those who wanted to prevent the right from getting closer to power. We have a reverse Brexit or Trump effect. It's actually noticeable in the polls. But I do need to say that I think many of these parties are populist parties rather than far right-wing parties, and I think that's the more dangerous part. What I mean by populist is they are inherently interested in voters. So they will shift their positions in order to maximize voter
support. And in fact, the Austrian party recently came out and said that they are now in favor of staying in the European Union
exactly.
and the currency, even though they were opposed to those things a year ago.
Exactly. If they were right-wing, far right-wing parties, they would have much more limited appeal. But because they can shift on a dime, you know, if you ask them, what's your position on the European Union, they give you three different answers, that allows them to pivot in different directions and create much broader voter coalitions. And what made this, you mentioned the Austrian Freedom Party, it started out as an old post-Nazi party, but in the 80s then morphed into this very first modern populist parties that can tell you almost, it was the first party that wanted Austria to be in the European Union, and now is the party most adamantly opposed to the European Union. So it really sort of changes wherever it sees fit. Now, of course, it's anti-Islam, and it used to be anti-Semitic, and it used to be anti-Israel. Now they got traveled to Israel and try to make friends and maybe nice. So it's they know exactly where the voters are and they position themselves accordingly. And that makes them very successful politically.
Is this more effective, I'm curious, in a parliamentary system?
Well, I think that exactly. The point is, you have to imagine in virtually all West European countries, the main parties are along a left-right axis. And the issue was always economy, more or less state control. In the 1980s, sort of you can imagine another axis perpendicular to that, where the issue was how much personal freedom should you have? And the Green parties emerged.
Yes.
But there was no counterpart. There was no post non-materialist axis on the right. There was nobody who represented traditional values, Catholicism, those kind of authoritarian ideas. And there was a vacuum, and new parties emerged into that. And the conservatives and the social democrats, the mainstream parties, were in the center. It left this whole part of the political party spectrum a void. Who represents traditional values? Who represents the old guard, old values? And the populists sort of have moved into that area, and they occupy it. And they're really neither left nor right wing, because on many economic issues, they're very left wing. They're for state intervention, but at the same time, they're for free enterprise. So they kind of like to do everything, and they promise everything. That's why they sometimes have a hard time when they're in government governing, because they have contradictions to deal with.
Of course. Well, I hate to put you out on a ledge, but, you know, this is going to be a very interesting year. Are you willing to make any predictions for where you think things are going?
It was certainly everything depends on France. And we can see that last year, many of the parties were very happy to see Brexit and they defended Brexit. When this didn't turn out so well, they distanced themselves. Also, Donald Trump is not super popular in many European countries. They welcomed him. Now many of these parties are more skeptical and more reserved, don't talk much about him. And now we have to see how France goes. If the National Front in France loses the second round of the election, the other parties will retool and probably moderate their message. If there will be a rousing victory, they'll probably be more anti-European and will probably focus on similar themes. Germany is the next big elections. I'm sure that the German Populist Party, Alternative for Germany, will do very well. It will probably enter the German parliament. They currently have a row. They have an internal issues, but we know internal issues and fights actually strengthens these parties because it gets, well, they become more focused, more coherent. They are a hodgepodge of different ideas, and every time they split, then they become more consistent with their message. But I'm sure they'll do well. But the French election is the key one because in Germany it's still going to be a coalition, and they may be probably in opposition. And we also see whether the German election will vindicate Merkel, the German Chancellor. And that will be an endorsement of her policy and what she stands for. If not, it will be moving Germany, most important country in Europe, in a different direction.
And we've got Austrian elections in a couple of years as well, so we'll definitely keep watching that. Well, thank you so much. We'll see how your predictions hold. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Reinhard Heinisch. He's a professor of political science at the University of Salzburg in Austria. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, and Jacob McClellan edited and produced the show. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Gorlott.